Welcome to another On Wellbeing podcast, and I am really excited today to talk to Johnny Ward, aka the anxious firefighter. Now, I actually came across Johnny on LinkedIn, on that social media platform, and I was really intrigued by lots of things that he was talking about. And when I did a little bit more digging, I found him a very fascinating character. He is a watch manager at Moss Side Fire Station in Manchester, which certainly brings its challenges with it. And he's also a trained psychotherapist working one-to-one with clients to help them manage anxiety. And we'll find out very quickly why he is doing that, why he is helping individuals manage their anxiety. And he also has a kind of mental health training practice, theanxiousfirefighter.com, and we'll leave some more details in the show notes. Now, the thing that really intrigued me when I spoke to Johnny was when he talked about, you know, the fact that your anxiety doesn't mean that you're broken. Let's not see it in that way. And in fact, your anxiety is telling you something. So when Johnny started to talk in this way to me, I found it very refreshing. I know lots of you listening today are struggling with anxiety and low mood, and we've talked about this on several of our On Wellbeing podcasts. But Johnny, I think, just brings a different spin to it. So welcome, Johnny.
Thank you very much for having me, Nicola.
That's okay. So let's just backpedal, because we're going to talk soon about anxiety, why we're not broken, why it's the way we live today. But let's reframe this from you and your story, and tell me how a firefighter in Moss Side suddenly trained as a psychotherapist anxiety. Walk us through that.
I suppose if we backpedal even a little bit further, my sort of journey with anxiety, if that's the right wording for it, started probably, what year are we in? About 10 years ago, 2013. I was a firefighter then at Ashton Fire Station, where I previously served. And in a nutshell, I started getting these, what I was doing is I was doing too much stuff. My environment, my world was really busy.
So let's just, I think it's helpful to contextualize that. We just talked about that. What was too much stuff? Work, life, what was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, a bit of all of it. And I suppose if I sort of break some of it down, like individually they were all positive. So I was right. Going for promotion, I was working at the fire station, I was doing some work with an overseas charity that sort of delivered fire equipment overseas. I was dating my now wife, we were looking at buying a house, I was trying to socialise, and then I was doing some other sort of part-time work. I used to teach first aid, so I was doing all these different things.
Busy. Putting your fingers into lots of pies.
100%. And individually they were all, there was nothing wrong with any of them. They were all good. But what I found is I was getting myself drawn mainly by sort of bosses at the time, say wanting this job done or wanting this job done or this wanting this work done. And I felt very out of control of my world. I felt like I was just being pulled left, right and centre, and there's so many demands and pressures that basically I started to get stressed, really stressed.
Okay, so you started to feel stressed. Did you recognise it as stress at the time?
No, not at the time. And I think this is some of the, I'm sure the work that you'll be doing is that sort of recognition of what's going on with me and what's going on with my body or what's my body telling me. No, I didn't. I recognised it as I was having these heart palpitations, my stomach would be all over the place, I wouldn't sleep, I'd have racing thoughts, all the sort of classic stuff. And what I kind of either, I suppose even like my kind of psychological language back there was even quite sort of limited. I didn't recognise that as something going on, certainly with my sort of psychological health, if you like, or my emotional health. I just thought at the time there was something physically wrong
with
me.
So you probably thought, my cardiovascular disease is coming, or
yeah,
something
absolutely.
Going on physically. You didn't, and it's really interesting because a recent podcast with Rachel talked about how the body keeps the score. The body is telling us, look for the dashboard signals in your body, and there they were.
Your
mind was racing, you had heart palpitations, you were feeling a bit sick in your tummy, and you just thought, ugh, something going on,
yeah,
something wrong.
I was absolutely convinced there was something wrong with me, and that word wrong is really important.
Okay.
Something wrong with me.
Because it wasn't the norm.
No, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. You know, and I was, I'm 37, so I'll have been sort of 27. You know, I was very physically fit and sort of healthy and all those sorts of things. But I still convinced myself there was something wrong with me, something wrong with my heart or my body, or, you know, something going to happen that's really dramatic. And what that sort of led to is I started having these panic attacks. Now, I didn't know they were panic attacks at the time. I thought, again, it was like, I mean, I initially remember thinking they were heart attacks and sort of cardiac arrests and all this sort of thing. And
so describe that process, because I think some people maybe not would not quite be aware of what a panic attack is. I think it's helpful. We say the word, but what is it?
And that's that again, I suppose, is it depends on the person. My experience of panic attacks was I would get this, I almost called it like, you know when you drop a stone into a water and it sort of pools out and sort of spreads out? It felt like there was something dropping from my kind of heart area into my stomach. And it just sort of spread out across my whole body like this sort of warmth, this energy, this fright, this sort of panic. And then my whole body would tingle. My mind would race. I would, you know, my stomach would go funny. My heart would feel really tight. My legs would go like jelly. And I'd feel really physically weak. Even though, to be honest with you, full of adrenaline, you're probably never stronger than you ever are. But I felt really weak.
So you felt weak because of this... like ripple that was going through your body. So you experienced it like a stone dropping. There was ripples of warmth or energy or fear, and they were going through your body. It was causing you to be lightheaded, to feel weak in your legs, I'm guessing.
Yeah, 100%.
And then what? I mean, that sounds exhausting.
It was exhausting. And I suppose when I had my kind of first one, I was absolutely convinced it was something wrong with my body.
Can you remember where you were when that happened?
Yeah, I can. I was in bed. I just got into bed in this new house that we'd bought, you know, and I lay down and I remember that feeling. It sort of dropped into my stomach and went around my body and I lay there and I still remember it to this day thinking, I'm having a heart attack. I'm having a heart attack.
How frightening would that be to really, add to the panic?
Yeah, really scary. So it's sort of like, you know, that within itself was kind of driving it, this sort of fear. And I ended up in A&E and they did all the tests and said, you're absolutely fine, Johnny. You're good, mate.
Did they then say, and theref? And you see, I think it's really interesting that we are literally describing a panic attack because so many of us are struggling right now with anxiety, stress, low mood, and how would we know, you know, to know what that is really important. So you were checked out by A&E and they never once said, I think what you've experienced is a panic attack.
No, not once.
So you went home none the wiser.
Yeah, I went home none the wiser and these sort of panics continued. And one of the reason they continued is it was so uncomfortable and so scary that I was terrified of it happening again.
Okay, so you were almost bringing it on with your fear.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure that's familiar for any of our listeners that may experience panic attacks. The worry of having the panic attack brought the panic attack on.
The anxiety of anxiety.
Oh, right. So, the anxiety of anxiety. Because anxiety, it's such a horrible space to be in,
it's horrible,
spiraling anxiety. You want to avoid it. I mean,
absolutely. And at the time, again, I still didn't think it was anxiety. I didn't even sort of want to sort of recognize. I think potentially deep down, but I think I was so afraid of it being anxiety that I almost convinced myself it was something physical. So this sort of process went on for ages. And I would be...
So like a span of weeks?
No. Like about a span of about a year.
And you still didn't really know...
No.
By this point, you didn't know it was a panic attack still?
No.
Gosh. So what we... What did your loved ones say? What were you thinking?
They had no idea.
Oh,
I did the
so you
very,
didn't. Hang on.
Very classic
Let's stop,
male thing.
Full stop. Let's just pause. In addition to struggling with the anxiety about anxiety and these panic attacks that left you exhausted, you didn't tell anybody.
Not a soul.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a lonely, scary place.
You didn't tell anybody, not even the person closest to you.
No. Not at all.
Okay. So, and I'm sure again, as I, you know, people listening who may not be able to speak up or feel concerned about speaking up about mental health conditions, well, you can see you're not alone. Lots of us sit in, you know, perhaps gendered, who knows. But anyway, so the year had gone by. You'd been having these things, probably really worried about them.
100%. Yeah. I think I went to A&E. I live in Glossop, so Tameside's my local. I got to the point where I knew the staff. You know, I think
it's
I went.
It's not funny.
It's not funny.
I'm kind of laughing. Well, it is funny.
Oh, like, don't, I mean, Johnny. Don't get me wrong. We can absolutely sort of. It's always important to sort of, you know, see the lighter side of things, I think. So
it's Johnny, tea with two sugars.
Hey, Johnny again, you okay?
Yeah.
But I did. I ended up in A&E sort of, God, I don't know, 8, 10, 12 times over the year. So maybe once a month, you know, with these panic attacks. I had a lot more than that. They were almost like my whole world. It was sort of from the moment of waking to the moment I went to sleep, I'd be thinking, I'm going to have a panic attack. I'm sorry, I'm going to have this heart thing. So again, I didn't know it was a panic attack.
This thing's going to come. Yeah. Now, let's just contextualize. Were you across this period doing the same like high level of work, you know, your overseas charity, your work, your how, you know, so you were this was staying as busy. And do you remember if it was getting busier? Were you experiencing stress? You still didn't realize it was stress?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. Right. So I carried on doing these things. And I suppose this is where it's important is that what my body was really telling me, if I look back, was you're doing too much, mate. You know, you're doing too much, you're getting zero downtime, but more importantly, you've lost control of your own world because I've just been pulled left, right and centre by these different pressures, these different needs.
There was no autonomy. There was no ability to direct anything. And we know, as I've spoken about before, in this space, you know, the kind of pandemic, our loss of control, our loss of certainty, that makes us, when we don't feel in control, it's a horrible sensation.
That's exactly what it was.
So you were not in control and this was happening. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely out of control. Didn't listen to what my body was telling me, which, you know.
But then you didn't know what it was telling you.
But then I didn't know what it was telling me. I mean, I suppose that language again, that kind of emotional language of going, what is this telling me? Just not there, you know. Just black and white, something wrong with me. That's it. Carried on doing what I'm doing. Then eventually what happened, I was the best man for one of my good pals at his wedding and we went away to Wales on a stag do. And it was, we were never like particularly big drinkers, if you like. So we went to do all these adventure things, kind of water sport sort of stuff and caving and all that sort of stuff. And we went to a restaurant the first night and to a pizza restaurant. And I still remember it really clearly. I sort of got up, needed the toilet, went to the toilet, came back, came straight out of the toilet and completely blacked out and just took out this waitress completely, flattened her against the floor and went blacked out. Completely on the floor. And it was just the accumulation of that year of pressure and stress where almost like the first time I could sort of try and relax.
Okay, because that was your moment where you were not maybe almost feeling the stress. This is so interesting. Yeah. It speaks volumes about what we've talked about in this podcast, about the body telling you, the body and mind. Your body said, ugh.
You've had enough.
Yeah, and to the waitress too.
And unfortunately,
let's hope she's well. Is she well?
I hope so. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean,
we haven't gone back to visit the restaurant.
No, I completely blacked out.
Yeah, on the floor. Okay, so you blacked out, right? I'm sure, and presumably your friends were very worried.
Combination.
Well, they might have been a bit drunk, so maybe not. But anyway,
first pint of the weekend, so not really.
No,
and that,
okay.
You know, that was sort of.
It was more an inconvenience. What's Johnny doing?
A little bit, but you know, some of them, you know, they're really good. They're really caring, but there was also that element of, you know, we're a group of lads. There's a lot of sort of, you know, Mickey taking and all that sort of stuff. But I woke up. I don't know. It was pretty quick, but then I don't remember a lot. Then the next thing I remember is an ambulance paramedic being over the top of me, putting the little heart monitors on, which they've done a million times. Him saying, there's nothing wrong with you, taking me to A&E, there's nothing wrong with you.
How frustrating kind of for you, though.
Coming back out. But the most important bit about that is that moment where I kind of blacked out and sort of collapsed in front of this restaurant. When I came round, it felt like my mind had changed. Like I could feel it. And I was this much more anxious, scared, worried person. It's like it had flipped to be like.
So the panic had been holding this stress and anxiety. I mean, who knows if this is true, but it was almost like the panic had been holding this stress and anxiety. That's how it had been being managed. And then the blackout had tipped it over into actually full body anxiety that so many other listeners, I'm sure, experience.
Yeah.
So then you were full on worried.
Just, it was like this sort of defense part of my brain went into hyperdrive. And it was like, right, the world's scary. You're going to be scared. So rather than going from sort of just experiencing these things, carry on what I'm doing, you know, sometimes they'd appear, sometimes they wouldn't, getting frustrated with it, wondering what it is, to, you know, just being anxious all the time, really anxious.
So up from the minute you wake up to the minute you go to sleep, everything feels problematic or like it's a potential threat. So there's that thing, it's like a trauma response, isn't it? But, you know, everything feels like a threat to you. You're on high alert.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a tiring place to be.
It's exhausting.
So so you remember that sort of feeling, that shift, that switch, and then there you were the rest of the weekend, and then what happened? Did you speak to your friends? I mean, so, I know you're going to say no.
No. Well, weirdly, I wasn't there the rest of the weekend. I phoned my now wife, at the time girlfriend, and she came and picked me up and brought me home. And that ride on the way home, I felt like, I mean, it seems so kind of small now when I look back at it, like such a small thing. All right, you know, you blacked out on a stag do and came home and ain't, you know, I know as sort of clinical workers, we shouldn't belittle people's experience, because to them it's really important, isn't it? And to them it's a big thing. But for me, I felt so pathetic, so vulnerable, so ashamed, and all these sort of feelings that I think had been bottled up, and even sort of from my past, and all these sort of things just came flooding out. And, you know, I even the way I sat in the car was sort of defeated, and you know, and it sort of hit me so hard that I had to leave this, you know, my friends and all that sort of thing, and sort of head home. And I just knew from that point that the world was going to be a little bit different for me for a while. I could sense it.
Wow.
And knew it.
That's it. An incredibly powerful story, really. Mm. It isn't just a ride home in a car. It's a ride home in the car to a life-changing
to a new life
start, and it's not necessarily a positive one. Did you talk to your partner?
Well, I think I was kind of forced to, you know, when she's sort of bringing me back. And, you know, she would say, look, you have been different. You have been weird. You've been off. You've been snappier. You've been not as sort of approachable, and all these sort of things. And it sort of came out with her as we headed home. I was still a little bit embarrassed about being honest.
Did you talk about the panic attacks?
Well, again, I still didn't really know what they were.
Oh, so you didn't? Yeah. Did you? Had you still not joined them up to the dots with
not
what?
Really. No, I was convinced there was something physically wrong with me. And then, so my partner convinced me to go to my GP again. And luckily I went and I saw a GP that I'd seen a couple of times. And he was really, really good. And he read through my notes. And he said, you've been to A&E quite a few times with this, haven't you? And I went, yeah. And he went, you've been to see us a few times as well, haven't you? And I was like, yeah. And I still remember it to this day. He rolled over on his chair and he had a pen. And he sort of tapped me on the head and he said, Johnny, mate, this is anxiety. This is in your head. And
how did you feel in that minute?
Oh, it was. I went outside and I sort of a bit stum, and then I went outside. He gave me a prescription for antidepressants, and I went outside and I sat in the car and I just cried. I just cried in the car park, and I just thought, because to me again, like I've come from sort of a certain background. You know, I've played rugby. I've been in the fire service. You know, I was in the TA for a bit. I've got this sort of almost like ego, if you like, that I was sort of realising was crippling away from me. It was sort of like I couldn't fulfil it anymore.
Yeah, that wasn't the reality you were living, wasn't the reality that other people see when they look at you and think about you.
Absolutely. And I could feel that almost like a ghost sort of slipping out of me. And I was sat in my car with this prescription for antidepressants and, you know, sort
You'd
of
been
thinking,
tapped on the head with a biro
tapped on the head
by
with
the
a biro
GP.
And told, this is anxiety. This is anxiety, Johnny. And then I'm Googling it and trying to figure out what it is. And it made sense. Like, it made logical sense to me. But I was almost like, again, so ashamed of going, wow, this is mental health, isn't it? And
This is mental health.
This is mental health, yeah.
And I'm sure you, like many others, thought, well, that's more shameful or not as... That's more awkward than physical health, isn't it? Maybe shameful is the wrong word, but, you know. Mm. And so there you were. So antidepressants rather than anti-anxiety.
Bog standard antidepressants.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Bog standard ones.
Okay. And so there you were. Was there an element of relief?
That's a really good question.
Because you weren't having a heart attack and.
Do you know what the irony is? Is no. I think at the time, I'd have almost preferred that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure that resonates with many people. You'd rather he'd said, you've got heart palpitations, you've got this heart condition. Yeah. What we're going to need to do is monitor you and blah, blah, blah. But he didn't. He said it's in your head.
Yeah. It feels weird saying that.
No, it doesn't. I think a lot of people would always rather have a diagnosis of a, you know, broken arm than a broken head, right? Mm. Because actually we know some element of stigma, hopefully less these days, but two, the work. There's work to be done and nobody else can do it because no one else is in your head. Mm. It's just you. Okay, so you were in the car park crying. You were still working as a firefighter, you're still doing all this. And then what?
So then I went through another number of years.
Right, okay.
Of realising, okay, so I've got this anxiety. And at the time, and I know we'll get to this in a bit, in my mind, right, well, I'm broken. There's something wrong with me. You know, I've got an illness. I've got anxiety. You know, I have it. Like I caught it from like a boot sandwich. You know, which is not the case. You know,
from
a dirty toilet seat. You know, it's not really how it works. So I went once I realised that it was anxiety. What I very quickly did is I was ashamed of it. Knew that I'd have to be vulnerable. Knew that it was going to be with me all the time as well. And that's one of the sort of insidious things about things like anxiety is like, if you've got like a fear of heights, if you're not anywhere near heights, it's not
you
afraid.
Can, yeah, okay, it's or spiders. You. Like, yeah. Let's just avoid spiders.
You just avoid it. But it's you, isn't it?
You're afraid of everything.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. I never thought about it like that. Mm, yeah.
You're kind of carrying it with you all the time. And what happened, because I was so ashamed of it in a way and so afraid of being honest about it, I very quickly started to become anxious of being anxious. I was afraid of being afraid.
You talked about that before. You were anxious about having the symptoms of what we now know as a panic attack again. Mm. And now you were sitting with a prescription of anxiety. It was in your head. You were the problem. You couldn't avoid it. And you knew, as I do, of what when that anxiety spiral happens, it takes you to a very dark place.
A horrible
place. Nobody wants to go into that because at that point, you know, life's, you know, not fun. So you didn't want to experience that, and so you were scared about it. And so, and you're talking about, have you did anything? Did you change anything at work? Did you shift anything? What happened? Did you tell anybody?
Yeah, so I well, not originally, but what I did, I started to speak to my wife about it, a girlfriend at the time, my wife now. And I think at the start, I treated it very much like I was ill. So I needed to manage this with medication and pulling back from things that I was doing, which is what I kind of did.
Interesting. So the first port of call, and we can come back to this because we'll talk about managing anxiety. Your first reaction was pharmaceutical treatment, obviously. Mm. Avoid things that might make me anxious.
Yeah.
And we'll find out soon why that maybe isn't the best solution. But yeah, we all know that. Let's stay in. Let's not put ourselves forward for things and let's sit. Okay.
Absolutely.
So how did that work out for you?
So, terribly, if I'm honest.
Okay.
Over a number of years, I sort of very much, you know, as a therapist now, I'm almost like a cliche sort of textbook example of someone struggling with anxiety. You know, I went through these avoidance behaviours. You know, I stopped socialising because I was afraid of getting anxious. I stopped going to the gym, afraid of getting anxious. I still remember getting anxious in the post office, you know, stood in the queue and going, hang on, what if I have a panic attack right now? And it was, you know, it's stuff that I've always been reasonably self-confident, pretty happy in my own skin, but it just sort of twisted that whole sort of element of who I was. And, you know, I remember having to like push myself to go to a coffee shop and get a coffee. Because what if I'm ordering and I have a panic attack? What will they think? How will they judge me? You know, what will they say when they see that? And by default, because I was anxious of getting anxious, I would get anxious. And if you want to understand that mechanism, the best way I describe it now to either my clients or in my training is, if you've ever been on a long bus journey and you really don't want to need a pee.
You need one.
And then you start needing one. You're thinking, oh, please stop needing a pee. And then it gets worse. And it just spirals. Same mechanism, but with anxiety.
Well, it's like anything. Mm. If you don't want to, you know, don't think about it before you say you don't want to think about it, because you'll just be thinking about it. And
Absolutely. So
you had anxiety about anxiety about anxiety. It's this knock-on thing. You are pulling back from everything. Mm. You're still working, assume, you know, and you're at home with your partner, but you're not living life like you could and would. And are you still anxious? This is the classic question.
So there's the thing, isn't it? And when I was at home by myself with nothing on the immediate future horizon, no, it was absolutely fine.
So in that little bubble that
little
nobody
bubble.
Can live in,
yeah.
You were fine. Okay.
The second I had to go out of it, oof, terrible. You know, second I had to leave my house, I carried on working.
So you were okay going to the fire station?
Okay is a very big word for it. Forced myself to go.
What about, I mean, maybe we'll get into this a little bit, but let's think about the nature of your job. extremely stressful. You're seeing some very traumatic things where we haven't talked about how that may or may not have played into the situation. And then when you knew you had anxiety, you were going still to see traumatic things. Is there any interlinking here or not at all?
So I've reflected on this quite a bit over the number of years, and has there been any kind of trauma response? Is my brain sort of picking up on something? Because yes, you're right. You know, I've been to many kind of, you know, what would be deemed traumatic incidents and difficult incidents. Something that I'll get to in a minute as well is I lost a couple of friends in the fire service to suicide as well. If I'm honest, I don't feel that the sort of the incidents were playing into it in a way. What was the then culture of the place. So it was very macho, very kind of like, you know, you've got to be on it, you've got to be, you know, big boy, all that sort of stuff. That was much more
sort of black humour to deal with what you were doing.
To an extent, but just more the kind of the culture that, you know, you had to be strong, you had to be sort of, you know, you couldn't show weakness or vulnerability. And anxiety is kind of that, isn't it? That's what really anxiety is. It's not really, but at the same time,
any mental health problem with being vulnerable and less than.
Definitely.
It's not the case, because actually it brings, as you all will discuss in a minute, having, when you flip it around, actually it gives you gifts, because you can see things in different ways. But in the culture you were in, it would have been deemed as a weakness. Mm. And therefore you felt, although you might have, you know, explained that you had it, it was sitting there on your shoulder like, I'm the guy with anxiety.
Exactly. And I've always been the guy who's been capable and able to perform and, you know, kind of a bit of a leader in there and all that sort of thing. And now I have to accept that my ego, if we sort of call it that, my perception of self is starting to crack open a little bit. And actually what's inside is just a vulnerable human being. And accepting that was really difficult, you know, because I'd built up this sort of ego over many, many years, and it sort of was being attacked. And that was hard. That was really hard.
So I think what we're saying there is the nature of the job, which had in itself trauma, was not necessarily what had contributed in some way to the anxiety, but potentially the culture of be brave, don't show your vulnerabilities, macho, obviously male dominated, and that, I guess, left you thinking, again, that's that thing of, well, I'd better not show how I feel. Mm. So there was fear around that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so the years passed, you were still avoiding things, you were doing your job, you were okay, as you said, that's a big word, you were just about okay going to it, you're probably just... probably took a lot out of you to go to work.
It was exhausting.
Okay, so that's what
absolutely
I'm seeing
exhausting.
And thinking. You were going there, you would come back, there wasn't much else you could do, and that's how you were living. And then?
Then I started drinking.
Oh,
so then I started drinking to control it. And it was, anxiety is the most exhausting thing. So I was coming home after a shift and going to bed, and I would sleep for 12 hours and still be exhausted. You know, but what I started to do to control it, and it's one of the things that many people do to control anxiety, and I completely understand why, is drink. And the reason I did it is because it's accessible and it works.
And it's acceptable.
And it's
acceptable. And it dulls your sensations.
And it works.
It doesn't make anyone say, what are you doing that for? Mm. You're not, you know, stood in the middle of the street necessarily injecting yourself. You're having a drink in a pub or at home, which everybody else does.
Or from a whiskey bottle in your fire kit.
Or from a whiskey bottle in your fire kit. Yes.
Yeah, which no one really knew about.
Which no one really knew about. Mm. They do now.
They do now. They know anyway.
Yeah, okay. So whiskey bottle in your fire kit. I mean, I'm sure you're not the first.
I'm sure you won't be the last.
No. Right. So you were drinking all day just to dampen it down
a little bit. Just enough to dampen it
just
down.
Just a little. Yeah. I can understand. That's just to take the edge off.
Just take the edge off.
Yeah.
And weirdly, I mean, again, the kind of the psychology of it behind it is I was thinking, well, actually, I'm better. A little
I'm
bit
better. Yes, it's like someone who might say, I've got anxiety, I'm better a little bit stoned.
Yeah.
I actually am.
We could
sit and argue this, because when I take the edge off, I can focus a bit more.
Yeah.
It's like someone with ADHD just taking something that's going to help them to focus, right? So,
definitely.
Okay, so that was taking the edge off, right? But I think the problem there is dose response. You might need more to take the edge off as you went along.
Yeah,
yes.
And I think I'm lucky, in a way, lucky with this, is that very quickly I kind of got one of my colleagues at the time sort of caught me drinking, if you like, and that then just blew the lid on it a little bit, and I had to kind of accept what was going on. And again, for anyone listening to this, it's, you know, I've always, you know, I've sort of consider myself from a certain background and a certain place, I, you know, the fact when you sort of get caught drinking at work, you think, oh my God, how did I end up here?
You know what I mean? I know exactly. You look at yourself and you think, like, how did I get to this?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, and you think, how did I go from there to there? But I did. Yeah,
but
you do. And it's like, it's not to be. I think listeners, lots of people resonate with that. Things that happen in their life, how did I get here? Mm. Well, you did. It's fine, you know. So well, there you were.
Well, life's hard, isn't it? And, you know, life doesn't wait for anybody. And, you know, something, again, we'll get into this maybe in a little bit, but, you know, things like capitalism are not good for your mental health. You know, I still had to pay bills. I still had to, you know, do this. I still had to pay my car and all that sort of stuff. So I couldn't just not work. But, you know, and you sort of got to crack on, if you like, and keep with the system and...
Yeah, capitalism isn't good for your mental health.
Really
there
not.
We are.
No,
it's true. Let's not get political. But for sure, it's
the demands
are high and they're getting higher in current society. Okay, so we've got lots of struggles. So you were caught drinking from your fire kit and your mate said, come on, Johnny.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
And then it was time to start looking at ways of, right, what is going on with me? How can I deal with this? Now, I had a manager at the time who is still an incredibly good friend. And I by no means want to sort of kind of badmouth him here whatsoever. But the first thing that happened, and I know why he did it, the first thing he did is go, right, Johnny, we need to put you sort of off the engines. Take you off because you're unwell.
Off the fire engines.
The fire
engines, presumably that meant, and I don't know, sort of I worked the fire service into the office.
Yeah, a little bit right. Like that. And I know why that was a thing, but what that did to me again was make me feel completely powerless, completely useless, even more.
You'd lost your identity,
even more. When actually, I mean, that might have been the right course of action, but what would have been nice just for anyone out listening there is going around, what do you need? What do you need, Johnny?
Yeah. What do you need? Yeah. And that would have given you some power back, probably would have helped you to make some decisions.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He said, probably from a health and safety perspective,
100%.
Right, you can't be on the fire station, you know. Okay.
And what that led me to was sort of go and access some psychotherapy through work. And I had CBT initially.
Okay, so for the listener, that's cognitive behavioural therapy. Did you want to just give us a brief couple of sentences about what that was?
Yeah, and CBT for me, like CBT's definitely got its sort of pros and cons, but for me, the initial couple of sessions was really powerful. And it was the reason so is it was the first time I'd actually gone, right, I need to look at this, I need to explore this. What is going on with me? Because even though, like, I knew then it was anxiety, I was still just, you know, watching YouTube videos on anxiety and reading the crap on social media about anxiety, about what it is and what it isn't. And
instead of looking internally,
instead of
becoming
internally,
self-aware.
Yeah,
we
instead
talk a lot about that. Like, what is you're your own superhero, right?
Indeed, your own
teller.
Yeah, absolutely. And it made me examine, so cognitive thoughts, my behaviour, how I was acting, and the emotions attached with that. So I started looking at the thoughts that were actually going on in my head, and it was like, you know, you're going to get anxious if you go to that place. You know, you're going to sort of look silly if you go to that place. You're going to look vulnerable if you go to that place. And then behaviours were very much around sort of avoidance and sort of coping mechanisms. So I was avoiding things, and if I was going somewhere, coping, drink, basically. And that was making me feel very, very anxious. So it was the first time I'd actually sort of explored, okay, are those thoughts true? Are they real? Are they right? And once I realised that whilst very powerful and whilst very difficult, they weren't always right. And it was a blank sort of this sort of realisation that, hang on, what I'm thinking is causing me to feel like this.
It's a thought.
It's a thought.
It's not reality.
It's not reality. And then I'm acting out what the thoughts want. So they're telling me to stay safe. So I'm staying safe. And that's making me feel anxious. And that loop was just this sort of like, I still remember driving down from my house past, I live in Glossop, so past all the hills where I was going somewhere. And it was like this weird sort of like idea that, hang on, I do have some power over this. I've got some control. And that was massive for me.
So the tipping point, as I like to call it, and I'm always interested in individuals' tipping points. There was a tipping point for you when you realised that the anxiety was a thought and that is controlled by you. It's not easy, but it's controlled by you. And that you were perceiving a reality based on the thoughts, but actually that wasn't necessarily the reality at all.
Mm.
And but then But knowing isn't necessarily the same as being able to do, right?
No,
so knowledge doesn't lead to behaviour change,
no,
as
it
I say.
Is not.
Yeah.
And as well, I think anxiety is a very power. Well, is the way I reflect on it and the way I work with my clients now is that anxiety is the most powerful emotion we have.
Wow. Why? Tell me more about that. Why is it?
So anxiety has been there since we crawled from the soup, if you like. It is designed to keep us safe. It kicks in to tell you to get away from things. You know, if anxiety felt like an orgasm, the human race would have died out many, many years ago. You know, it's designed to be uncomfortable.
Okay.
It's designed to be painful.
Yeah.
You know, if a bear walked in this room right now, we'd feel anxiety, wouldn't we? And we'd
of
leg
course.
It, you know, and,
yeah.
and, you know, and run away. We wouldn't just sit here and go, well, that bear's going to be...
So it's a good thing.
It's a
we should
it's
embrace
a
anxiety
thing.
Is telling us something.
Being yeah. anxious is an incredibly healthy thing. You're meant to be. It shows your emotions are working right. The emotion itself is not wrong. Anxiety is right. It's designed to keep you safe. Now, what can happen, and what certainly happened with me, is it started triggering in places where I didn't necessarily need it.
Yes.
Does
so
that make
it's
sense?
Not... Okay, so the thing is, anxiety, healthy, good, reserved... for certain situations.
Mm.
What happens to many of us, and as we'll find out, not because we're broken, but because we live in a very troubled and difficult world, is that the anxiety starts to come into all sorts of spaces and places. And I don't know why, but it escalates. And then you find yourself always feeling anxious.
Well, I think we do it, and from my experience, and certainly from my clients' experiences, is we do it because we sort of start attaching things to the anxiety. It might be a place or a person or an environment, and there's sort of two sides to that. One, it might be, so for example, if I'm getting anxious into the post office, so the next time I go there, I think, well, hang on, last time I went in there, I was really anxious. So my body goes, well, don't go in there then. Like, if that's uncomfortable, don't do it. It's not wrong, because it was uncomfortable, but it's not necessarily
true.
Needed or true or whatever it is. But that sort of visceral kind of protective sort of, you know, chimp side of me is going, don't go in there. It'll make you feel rubbish. You know, it's scary.
And we, as humans, avoid things that make us feel bad,
right? Of course we do.
And, why would we go somewhere that's going to make us feel awful?
Well, exactly. If you go back to the you walk into a bear cave and you get attacked by a bear, the next time you go near a cave, you go, well, don't go in that.
No, like, correct. the bear cave to the post office.
Yeah, exactly. So it's doing exactly what it's meant to be doing. The problem is that doesn't necessarily fit with modern life. You know, I need to go to the post office. I need to go to the shop. I want to go out with my friends to a pub, whatever it is. But my body isn't wrong. It's just...
making the wrong associations.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've associated things that aren't, you know, you could argue not really scary, but that my body is thinking is scary. But that said, we're very social creatures. And one of my fears was fear of things like social judgment. Would I be accepted? Would I look vulnerable? Would I look stupid?
Since the anxiety diagnosis.
Yeah.
Right. So the anxiety diagnosis itself led to more anxiety because then what would people think of you with the anxiety?
Yeah, which is a legitimate fear.
100%,
you know, and my body's like, okay, well, if you go in there and have a panic attack, they're going to make you, you're going to look silly and vulnerable. So don't go in there then. So it was doing the right thing. It just was in a context that wasn't necessarily helpful for me in my world, if that sort of makes sense.
Okay, so we'd gone through this period of time where you'd been avoiding things. You were just about making it work, but you were exhausted. You were drinking, but you started to stop and say, okay, I'm in the driving seat. This is a thought. I have some power. I can do something about it. How did you then harness that into action? Because this is the most important point for everybody, isn't it? Yes, you know, you could be on pharmaceutical treatment, which is helping you to some extent, but you need to do more. You know, you've got to do it. You can't avoid life forever. What do you do? How did you harness it, Johnny?
Yeah, so again, this has been a journey for me and, you know, without trying to sound too cliche, but I guess I started with the sort of the medical model. So I kind of assumed that this anxiety was something wrong with me, that it was wrong. And I went down, you know, the CBT route, tried to sort of challenge my thoughts and my behavior and sort of get back to going to places, even if I felt uncomfortable. And that, don't get me wrong, that really helped. I'm not knocking that. That really worked. I took the medication, so I went on antidepressants for a number of years. And just for the record, I don't advocate for or against. You know, I think it's dependent on need and if they're useful. And that's, I'm not a doctor, so I can't really sort of entertain that debate other than my own experience. And for me, it felt like I was turning the volume down on anxiety. It didn't stop
that's
it.
That's a good analogy.
Just, turn the
just
volume
turning
down.
It down. And when you turn the volume down on something, it enables you to hear.
Yeah.
Right.
And carry on doing your life. Do you know what I mean? Like everything wasn't so painful. I then had therapy, you know, psychotherapy, and I learned all these sort of coping mechanisms and coping skills, you know, from breathing to grounding and all that sort of stuff. Now, again, they were really, really useful at the time, and they helped me get through the day. And that was something that I sort of carried on using for a number of years. And when the anxious firefighter came, or it was fireman initially, I started a Twitter account called The Anxious Fireman, and I started sort of tweeting about my experiences of anxiety. And that's where kind of like, you know, The Anxious Fireman was kind of born. And that led to all sorts of places. I've been here a couple, not this particular building, but sort of BBC a number of times, and been on Radio 4 and did all that sort of stuff, which was great. And started sort of speaking openly about my anxiety. And that in itself was cathartic, you know, really cathartic, getting it off my chest, sort of almost like...
I mean, that goes back to a lot of the things we talk about. When you talk, when you communicate about your mental health, your psychological well-being, it is cathartic. Yeah, it does make you feel better.
Well, it made me feel less unusual, because it sort of brought lots of other people out who said, yeah, I feel like that. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, okay, maybe I'm not unusual. But then there's this idea I sort of throw around again with my clients and my courses, where it's like expression is the opposite of depression, not happiness. You know, happiness is an emotion we can feel, but it's that act of going, this is my experience of the world. And then to have it heard and validated.
Absolutely. We need to feel heard. We need to feel valued. We need to feel loved. Those are three very basic needs that 100%. We all have. Mm. And if we're not getting those, then something's going to break. So I love that. Expression is the opposite of depression. I haven't heard that before. Like we say, we set aside happiness because that's just a momentary thing. We can't always have that. But when we express, we're doing something to help ourselves.
Yeah,
it's hard for people though, isn't it?
It really is. And I guess this gets to the next part of where I'm at. So I suppose I'd started sort of talking openly about my anxiety. I'd started talking about it on the fire station, at work, and in all other aspects of my life. But I guess the bigger part of it was I was still a bit uncomfortable with it. I was happy to talk about it, but I was never really at peace with it.
What were you uncomfortable with?
But still the whole kind of macho idea of being capable and not being vulnerable and not being able to be the person that I kind of built myself up to be.
Associated with the rugby, the fire service. Okay. So you weren't who you thought you were. It was an identity thing. You were in a different identity than one you'd thought. Yes.
Indeed. And that's exactly, you know, really where that took me longer to get a grip with than anything else.
Self-acceptance.
Self-acceptance.
Which is key to psychological well-being.
Pretty much everything to
psychological
well-being.
Yeah, it really is. Uh-huh.
And the other side of that, and for anyone out, sort of listening out there that might sort of... Mental health is not all in our heads. And a lot of it is driven by environment.
Mm-hmm.
So the culture within the workplace I was working at the time wasn't intrinsically safe for me to sort of, you know, come out, if you like. Now, that has been dramatically changed in the 10, 13 years since this all started. I want to make that really clear.
In the fire service, But there's lots, but it's still worth saying. We've got a podcast on psychological safety with Dr. Nicola Stenberg. She talks a lot about our current environment and how job insecurity and uncertainty is left to men, maybe not the fire service, but lots of our listeners might be sitting feeling psychologically unsafe. And that's a...
Not being able to feel that they can be vulnerable or say they're anxious and all those sort of things. Now, that was my experience at the time, although and I want to make it really clear that the service has made dramatic shifts forward, and it is not the same service as it was those years ago. And I feel much more kind of psychologically safe there now. And that's really important to acknowledge. The point being, though, is that mental health is not all in people's heads.
No.
And that's where I had to kind of get to, is I did all these sort of, you know, breathing techniques and tapping and, you know, kind of things. But what that was still saying to me deep down...
It's you. You're broken. You are the one that needs to fix yourself. And I absolutely agree, Johnny. Yes, there are things we can do, but let's not ignore the world that we live in. You know, Brexit, a pandemic, cost of living crisis, energy crisis, Ukraine, you know, marginalisation. It's hugely anxiety provoking.
Of course it is.
And it's really, I know people say, oh, you know, we had it worse 70 or 80 years ago. I think maybe you had it worse from a physical perspective, but mentally, you were not surrounded 24/7 with horror stories on your phone, people telling you how to live. You know, we weren't living in this strange state that we're in, where we're losing touch with others, where we're not able to slow down, we're overwhelmed. Yeah. And I think, you know, I agree with you. you can do so much on yourself, but you have to also say, maybe I need to make some changes to my environment because the world I live in isn't very conducive to reducing anxiety. So what can I do, would you say? What can I do to my space?
Absolutely. And this is one of the things whenever I go into a company and offer training, you know, they'll bring me in and say, oh, we can do breathing techniques. Can you do this? Can you come in and reduce our stress levels?
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. Of course I can't. You can reduce your stress levels. Look at your workload, your demand, your relationships, and you know, all these sorts of different things. You know, I can offer some tips and techniques to help people through little processes, but can I reduce your stress load in a work environment? No, of course I can't. You can do that, you know, by having a more sort of conducive work environment. But what it sort of led me to was to sort of really examine where these fears were coming from. And what that led me to do was start to have to rebuild my perception of self. So who am I? What's my identity? Who is Johnny Ward? And Johnny Ward is just a vulnerable guy who lives in the world, and that is it. I'm nothing more. I'm nothing more special. I get anxious. I get low mood. I get happy. You know, all these different things. And the more comfortable I got with myself,
the reality of life,
and especially down to the anxiety, the more comfortable I got being anxious, the less it arrived.
I mean, so, that's just so sort of profound that the more comfortable you got, and we're talking about years have passed in this period. The more comfortable you got with being Johnny, the anxious person, the vulnerable person, the less the anxiety reared its head, because you were no longer, I suppose, doing what we call masking when we talk about neurodiversity. You know, you weren't pretending that you weren't that anymore.
And I wasn't fighting it. You know, breathing techniques, sort of, you know, all these things. Don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking them. They can really help in the moment. But ultimately, they are a way of fighting your own emotions. And your emotions, like we said before, are stronger than you. And they need to be heard. You know, just like a child yelling at you, they don't stop until you acknowledge them. You know, you shouting at them doesn't do anything. And your emotions are very similar. I was never going to sort of out yoga, out breathe,
out yoga,
or out fight my anxiety. It was always going to win. So the best thing what I do now, and my top tip, if anyone is interested in that,
they will be,
is if you're starting to get anxious, speak to the anxiety like it's your child self, and you go, you get as anxious as you need to. Go for it. Throw a full on panic. Make me go red. Make me sweat. Make me faint. Make me pass out. Do it. I'm more than happy with that. And I can guarantee you over a bit of time, nothing will happen.
So, you know, and I think this is a really lovely point to come to. Johnny, your story is an evolution of understanding of what anxiety is. And it's such a evocative story because you didn't know, and then you did know, and then you didn't know what to do, and then you were told to do this, and then you did something else. And through a process of elimination, you arrived at the result that was self-acceptance and a recognition that the world we live in is very challenging for someone who has a propensity to have anxiety. And what you're saying is that when now one of your most successful strategies is when that anxiety bubbles up, as I'm sure it does with me, I'm sure it does with many listeners, you say, that's okay, bring it on.
Go for it.
Be anxious. Think about all these spiraling thoughts, and you think that sometimes that will therefore, over time, dilute the anxiety.
Yeah. The way I think of it is in sort of coping techniques and management, they're a little bit like a dam. So they can stop the anxiety for a little bit. So in a short-term thing, you know, you're going to give a speech and you're uncomfortable. You come to do a podcast and you maybe feel sort of a little bit anxious about it. You can dam it up a little bit, but it is always going to overflow eventually. The other option is go, no, crack on, go for it, and it will pass. It will flow through like, you know, like water.
It's going to come out anyway, right?
Come out anyway.
So, but can we ever reach a point? I mean, we can talk about some more top tips in a minute, but this is a compelling question. Will we ever not be anxious, people that have anxiety then?
No, we shouldn't be either. And if I can, I mentioned this before, and please forgive me if I'm sort of coming back to you a little bit. Sometimes, even like we have anxiety, I have anxiety. You know, as I said to you earlier, I didn't catch anxiety from a boot sandwich.
Yeah. Or the toilet seat.
Or a toilet seat. Anxiety is hardwired in all of us. We all have the ability to feel anxiety. And again, I get clients who come to me and say, can you get rid of my anxiety? Well, unless I can pull out your immune system, then no. you know, you're never going to get rid of it.
It's not. So we don't have anxiety. Mm. It's just, it's there.
It's there. Right?
Yeah. It's there. So will we ever get to a place where it diminishes?
I think if the world has an element to play in that, like you said before, you know, the world is an anxiety-provoking place and we should accept that. I think you there's strategies you can use to limit some of that. And the very cliche, you know, the physical mind, you know, the mind and the body are not different things. So, you know, looking after yourself, good sleep, good exercise, good diet, you know, lots of water, all that sort of thing. Staying away a bit from sort of harmful social media, comparative things, you know, news, bad news, all that sort of thing. And absolutely, you know, socializing with friends is healthy, you know, expressing emotions is healthy. You know, all these things that, you know, for some people they work, but they're sort of statistically sort of going to do you good. Yeah, we can absolutely do that. Are we ever going to eliminate anxiety completely? No, we are. And that's an unachievable goal. Yeah, and nor should we, because it keeps you safe.
So see it as a sort of, I mean, obviously we're kind of getting into the work of Dr. Steve Peters a little bit, like a kind of chimp paradox, but actually see it as like a naughty, not a naughty pet, just something that's there with us all the time. Yeah. And I think that's a lovely idea for listeners and myself, to not try to see it as something to get rid of. It's there. It's there for a reason. Unfortunately, some of us, it floods us a little bit more than others, right?
It can be really challenging, not taking that away.
Yep, and it's it can disrupt our daily life.
It can.
But when we dilute it by letting it come out, and when we think about it as a thought, okay, it's a thought, it's not reality. And when we recognize that we're not broken, so don't see ourselves as broken, see it as a how it's just us as perhaps a sensitive person existing in the world, that helps it. It dilutes it for me. It doesn't make it this massive monster that we must battle with.
Yeah.
And like we've said, when you try and battle with something, it sometimes becomes bigger, doesn't it? It doesn't get smaller. When you give it more authority, perhaps we need to give it less authority.
Yeah. Well, another analogy is whenever we fight fires, you know, we don't sort of throw more fire on it, you know. So, you know, we open the windows to let the smoke out, you know, when we put cooling water on it to cool it down. And it's a similar sort of thing. You know, we don't go chucking more fire on it. And that's all fighting it does, really. It gives it more energy. It gives it something to fight against. And that anxiety is there for the fight, isn't it? So if you offer it a fight, it will come for you. And that's where it can get uncomfortable. And I think that's one of the problems with some of the strategies or the healthcare system is it medicalizes these things as you are broken, there's something wrong with you, you need to eliminate this. And actually, emotions are very rarely wrong. And another tip would be to listen to what it's telling you. And if I'd have done that years ago with the stress.
In that first time when you felt that panic attack in your bed or whatever, and you'd known then about it being a panic attack, you might have thought, okay, Johnny, maybe I'm doing a bit too much.
Yeah.
Maybe...
What is this telling me? And what do I need to do?
But actually, it took 7 years or 6 years before you properly even realised. And okay, so we've talked about some just reframing, which is what I'm enjoying so much about our conversation. We're really reframing anxiety, and I think that is so helpful, and it's giving the power to the individuals too. Mm. It's like, it's really, and that really helps. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you would use or recommend to not manage or reduce, but to work with anxiety, our friend anxiety, what can we do with it?
It's tricky, isn't it? Because it sounds like I'm just telling you sort of like, oh, let it all go and all that. And that isn't
enjoy
always,
the anxiety.
Enjoy anxiety, and it's not enjoyable. Yeah. It's horrendous. It's designed to be. So that, you know, the things I would sort of always start with is a model I'm sure you've heard that, you know, gets banded about a bit, sort of biopsychosocial, biological, psychological and social. Biological, look after yourself physically, you know, sleep, diet, exercise, all that sort of stuff. I'm sure there'll be other much more kind of qualified people that can talk through that on the podcast. And then psychological. So some of those techniques, you know, breathing techniques, grounding techniques, kind of letting the anxiety go, like I've just talked through, or, you know, kind of allowing it to, you know, albeit uncomfortable, but to pass and to try and learn to be more comfortable being uncomfortable. And the more you learn to be less afraid of the feelings of anxiety, the less you fear them. And then there's a social element as well. And that might be about as best you can, and I recognize that people are in different places and have different social groups, but the more you can express, the more you can be honest about what it is you're feeling, the more you can say to your close friend, do you know what, I feel really anxious or I feel really low, and that be okay and that be fine. And you don't, and if you're the person hearing that, you don't necessarily have to fix that. That's not your job there. Your job is to listen.
To hear it and to really listen.
To validate it.
Talk about that in psychological safety. When you're really listened to, that in itself is a therapy, isn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah.
And we can't all afford a therapist, so sometimes it's good just to have close friends that really listen to you when you're saying, I'm feeling this. Yeah. And as you say, it's not their job to go, right, okay,
this is what we need to do.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And in fact, that's... often worse, isn't it? You just want someone to hear you.
So, okay,
so we've got so many interesting ideas about recognizing your environment, recognizing it as a thought, seeing it as something that you've got to let in and let pass through you, making sure you communicate how you're feeling and are listened to and heard, using pharmaceutical treatment to turn the volume down if that is recommended to you by your GP or if that's the avenue that you want to go down. And taking good care of your physical health, because we know that over-caffeinated and alcohol and no sleep and, lack of movement, those things are, you know, the worst thing for anxiety, really. So trying to, ameliorate it with that slightly. And taking probably your foot off the pedal a little bit for many people.
That might be the other thing. Listen to it. Mm. What is it telling me? You know, if you're feeling stressed, if you're feeling overwhelmed, again, this is something I get a lot when I go into businesses. I feel stressed and overwhelmed. You know, what can I do to manage this? And the first thing I kind of put back to them is that stress isn't in you. You know, like, you haven't swallowed
a
stress
reaction.
Pill. It's a reaction. Anxiety is a response. Depression is often a response. Stress is a response to something that is happening in your world.
It's not just you going wrong in your head.
There is nothing wrong with you. Your body's doing exactly what it's designed to do. It's telling you that you've either taken on too much or the world's too hard or that you're overdoing it. You know, I mean, I always remind myself that ultimately I was born here and I had no choice in that. You know, I didn't choose where I was born, the political system I was born into, the country I was born into. I didn't even choose my parents. I didn't choose my friends. I didn't choose very much of this world. I'm just kind of here, and so are all of us. And I think sometimes we like to think we kind of got it sorted out, and we don't. You know, we're just kind of all trying to get by. So be kind to yourself, you know, you don't think you've got to get life sorted. I'm not sure anyone's got life sorted. I don't think there is anything to sort.
That's a really good point. We had a great podcast on kindness.
Existing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
it's maybe we don't have to sort it. Maybe we just have to try and find some joy in it.
But listen, if you're feeling stressed or overwhelmed or panicky or anxious, I'd be asking myself, what does that mean? And if it's because your workload's too much or, you know, your boss is bullying you or whatever it might be, that needs attention. You know, you're never going
to have the courage to face that.
And I recognise that entirely. I recognise that's much easier said than done. And I wouldn't ever try and, you know, when I work with clients and I get, you know, it can be a process, it can be, you know, psychological resources, physical resources, you know, allies, all that sort of thing to help people through that. I totally get that. But you will never out-banana bowl a bully in work, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, so it needs, you know, we need to look at our realities as well, and that is difficult but healthy.
So, yeah, a little bit of courage and self-awareness and a proper appraisal of the situation. Mm. There are so many interesting things, I think, that we've learnt today, Johnny, and I really appreciate you talking to us. And we will leave some more thoughts and some summaries in the show notes, of course. But I just think that the biggest takeaway for everybody is that just that you're not broken. Mm. It's doing what it needs to do. Let it pass through and let's look at all the other things around it and take a bit of stock around that. And it is also just a thought.
Yeah.
Thank you, Johnny, so much for today.
You are more than welcome. Thank you for having me on, and it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.